right, y'all. Welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I am the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and I've recorded more than 5,000 interviews going back to 2003, all of which are available at scotthorton.org. You can also sign up for the podcast feed. The full archive is also available at youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. All right, you guys, on the line, I've got Tara Kopp. She is the National Military and Veterans Affairs Correspondent for McClatchy Newspapers, and previously was the Pentagon Bureau Chief for the Military Times, and a Senior Defense Analyst for the U.S. Government Accountability Office. That is actually my favorite government office. And she's the author of the award-winning book, The War Bird. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Very happy to have you here. And you guys have written this important story. Your partner here, I'll let you pronounce his name for me. Sorry.
Oh, sure. So our data fellow, Shirsho Dasgupta, mm-hmm. and Ben Weider, our data editor, were integral to this series.
Great. And now, is it the two big parts? Or am I missing something?
It's two. We did one main bar that looked across the services at rates of cancer among veterans. And then we did one that just focused on the aviation
right.
community.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I hadn't missed
really
any of the
long,
stories. But okay. So
the methodology is interesting. That's a third story in itself, but it's just like how we bulletproofed this.
Right. Okay, great. All right. And now, again, sorry, I didn't really introduce it right. The story is about increased rates of cancer in the military. So let's start with the story about the pilots here based at China Lake in California, if we could.
Sure. So for months, we had been hearing about the veteran aviators, those who had flown fighter jets or surveillance planes, over the last several decades for the Air Force or Navy, were now seeing these increased rates of cancer. There was a lot of prostate cancer, a lot of urinary cancer, some esophageal cancers. And so one of the things that popped up as we were talking to veterans, and by the way, I think it should be said that this is a story they want out. The aviation community in itself tends to be very closed. Pilots tend to talk to each other. They don't tend to trust the media. And I heard that a lot from some of the veteran pilots I talked to, that they didn't trust the media, but they were willing to talk to me. They, because of the people that they flew with, they're seeing them succumb to cancer. So there was this interesting cluster at China Lake, which is a premier weapons testing base that actually tested parts of the shell casings and incendiaries for Fat Man and Little Boy, the nuclear and atomic explosions that ended World War II. So this is a vast base out in Northern California, and the men who lead it, the commanding officers who lead it, are often career aviators. They're Top Gun pilots. They are career test pilots with thousands of flight hours each. And that's how they become commanding officers of this base. And it happened that four out of seven consecutive commanding officers died relatively young of cancer. The youngest was 55. The oldest, I think, was 62. And, the men that flew these planes and led this base, they didn't have unhealthy lifestyles. They were physically fit. They were physically fit even to their final year of life in many instances. Would run 30 miles, some of them were not smokers. They didn't have histories of cancer. And so the family started to talk to me, and some of the men that flew with them started to talk to me. And it's just, there's basically a question out there, what's behind these cancers? And they want the Navy to look into it.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, as everybody knows, statistics can be misleading. And when it comes to who's sick with what, the challenge is always going to be sample size and which questions are asking and which numbers have gone up and down and by how much and all these things. And as you said, you guys have a whole section here actually about your methodology. So can you break down some of these numbers for us to so that people can understand why it seems like, even if this isn't all very definitive in terms of cause and effect, that there really is something to be concerned about here?
Sure. We took a very careful, very calculated approach to this data. So anytime a veteran goes to either a clinic, an outpatient clinic, a hospital, a medical facility in the VA healthcare system, as that appointment is closing out, the doctor or the nurse going through the appointment with them has to close it out by putting in what's called an ICD code. It's the International Classification of Diseases code. And it's a code that's recognized worldwide as, you know, how do you diagnose lymphoma? Well, it has a specific code. Things that are not cancer also have specific codes, like diabetes has different types of codes. So we went and requested from the Department of Veterans Affairs every single billing to their healthcare system under a cancer code from the ICD codes from fiscal year 2000 to fiscal year 2018. And that resulted in more than 12 million data points, 12 million unique visitors. Sorry, data points is a little bit different. But so every time a veteran went into this healthcare system and had an appointment, they were identified by their Social Security number. And that was one unique ICD visit under a specific cancer code. So if they went five times over the year to go see the doctor, we only counted them once because it was unique. So the numbers aren't inflated. The numbers don't, you know, it's not because somebody went five times that we got to 12 million. It's because there are a lot of veterans with cancer and a lot of veterans needing care.
And then, so, but when you compare that to the rates of cancer for other Southern Californians, for example, what do you see?
So we have been trying to do that comparison. The data that the VA provided us, we could not do an apples-apples comparison to the general population. NIH and the CDC both calculate for general population the rates of cancer, and we wanted to do that with this data. And we actually got, you know, we asked the VA, well, how do you have a good handle on what, you know, if this is a worrisome trend or not, if you can't even compare it to the general population? We didn't hear back on that. We are working on further data and digging even deeper to be able to do that comparison rate. But from what we found and the increases we found, and also in the increases that the VA provided in its own kind of internal system it looks at, your urinary cancers were up from that time frame across veterans more than 60%. Your prostate cancers were up 23%. Your blood cancers, lymphoma, myeloma, leukemia, they were up 18%. So it does become a question of how many cancers are there out there? Does the VA have the resources it needs to be able to address this? And what's the cause for the rise?
Hang on just one second. Hey, guys, I got to tell you about WallStreetWindow.com. It's the great Mike Swanson. He made a killing on Wall Street back in the day, and now he sells advice for reasonable prices. You need to know what to do to protect your assets. WallStreetWindow.com. Hey guys, I know you're going to love Will Griggs' new book we just published at the Libertarian Institute, No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg. It's wonderful. It's terrible. It's devastating. You'll laugh. You'll get angry. You'll miss him. You'll be inspired to fight for freedom. With perfect cover art by Scott Alberts and a brilliant introduction by Will's great friend and protege Thomas R. Edlam, it is a fitting legacy for a brilliant man and nearly tireless defender of liberty. Get No Quarter, The Ravings of William Norman Grigg, in paperback or Kindle on Amazon.com. All right, now, and on the specific case of the pilots, it seems like there's sort of a prevailing theory there about the radars in their nose cones. Is that right?
Yes, and I have continued to talk to pilots about this over the last couple of days. Ever since the story published, we've actually had more pilots reach out to us and say, thank you for finally asking these questions. You know, if you think about it, since Vietnam, since we've been flying the F-4s and now all the way to the F-18 and even now the F-35s, our radars have become more powerful and more capable. But because of the performance of these jets, you have to be very careful of how much weight you add, which means that there's not a whole lot of shielding that goes on with these different radars, even though they're more powerful. So the pilots are asking, you know, is it because we flew so many thousands of hours that even if it was a low emission from our radars because of overtime, is that what led to the cancers? The Air Force is actually taking this really seriously. They have started to commission a study to look at all of their veterans and get a calculation, like actually get a number of how many of their veterans do have cancer. What was their job code? Were they a fighter pilot? Were they an avionics mechanic who, you know, the ground crew that was working on these radars? So they can begin to get a hold of it and then start to look for cause.
And then now one of the ones that was, I'm not sure I saw this. I don't think I saw this in your piece, but this has been in the news over the last few years. And there was actually a fan of the show who used to send me articles about this all the time. I never really did a good job of following up on it, but it was about the firefighting foam that they use was polluting the groundwater and was causing, I think it was believed, was causing cancers, not just for military personnel, but for people in the surrounding areas. And there are lawsuits going on and this kind of thing. Did you guys look at that at all?
Yeah. So if you take a kind of a 90,000 foot view, and you're not just looking at the pilots that are reporting cancer, but you're looking across the services, and you think about the last two decades of war where millions of men and women have gone to Iraq and Afghanistan to serve, the types of toxins that they, or the bases they were at, or maybe even the communities they came home to have been exposed to, are numerous. Overseas deployed, those men and women at many of the bases were exposed to the burn pits, which were, you know, toxic pits where everything from like human waste to ammunition was dumped and just burned openly. And the service members who were at those bases just breathed the particles in day and night. Back at home, even in their own communities, because of the military foam that has been in use since the 1970s that is now seeped into groundwater and well water systems, you have communities with unusual cancer clusters as well. So we did look at the overall picture. And what we were very careful not to establish causality, because you can't. You need a bigger picture medical scientific study to really look at cause. What we did is kind of pull the curtain back and say, look at these numbers. You know, this this is a cause for alarm. It's time to pay attention.
All right. And then so when you get to the broader question of, especially like you talk about the burn pits and the, I think it was Army or was it Marines too, but certainly mostly Army station and National Guard and so forth, stationed at the Balad Air Base north of Baghdad for many years during Iraq War II. And I think, isn't that even where Joe Biden's son, his other son, Bo, was stationed?
Yeah.
And before he died of brain cancer?
Yeah, they do, you know, they do suspect that his cancer could be tied to burn pit exposure. When we spoke to some Air Force Special Operations Command forces who were put into Balad, there's a woman who is a registered nurse full-time but went to Balad in 2008 with the Air Force as part of the National Guard. She was there, and 30 days later, her future husband, that they got married afterwards, was also sent to Balad. Then they were diagnosed in 2012, 2 weeks apart, she with breast cancer, he with testicular cancer. That's just two of what she says are more than 100 different names that she's collected from the unit who are now reporting cancers or have had to medically retire because of a cancer or who have actually passed away because of a cancer. And so she's working to raise awareness about that base, which is in Pennsylvania. But that's just one of many bases that we heard about due to exposure and what they suspect might be the link to the cancers that these service members and these veterans are now facing.
Yeah. And it's such a quandary. You have a quote from an expert that's obviously completely fair, where he says, listen, it's really hard to establish causality here. A lot of these things make perfect sense in hindsight, but you really just can't tell. But then on the other hand, we know that they were burning every kind of benzene ring under the sun in those burn pits. The kinds of pollution that far beyond what's at our local garbage dump was the kind of stuff being burned in there and just adjacent to these people. You just look at that smoke, you know it's full of carcinogens of who knows what description. So on one hand, it's incredibly hard to nail down. On the other hand, it's completely obvious and inescapable.
Yeah, and you've nailed it on the head. I mean, it's heartbreaking to see that there's 187,000 veterans who have signed up for the VA's burn pit registry that are now facing some type of respiratory illness or cancer. And what they're trying to get the VA to do is to recognize that, yes, across the services, this was a toxic exposure. And from here on forward, what they want is for the VA to recognize the service connection more readily, because a lot of these service members aren't getting the VA to recognize their claim, and they're still fighting to get the medical care that they need. And that's what's kind of a call to action across Congress right now.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's the whole other angle here, whole other area of interest here is how much difficulty these guys have getting treatment at the VA hospitals. And I know it varies from place to place and from time to time as well. But then the secondary question is, how much resistance are the brass in the military, not the VA, but in the military putting, or in the VA too, I guess, how much resistance are they putting up to really looking into this and trying to get to the bottom of it? Because, of course, that could cost them their depleted uranium shells or something that they want very badly if they find out that it's actually killing their infantry.
So I just asked this question at the Pentagon briefing today at 11. Secretary Esper is going to be in New York with the VA Secretary Wilkie to mark Veterans Day, and they're going to be on the stock exchange and ring the bell for veteran-owned businesses. And so I kind of raised my hand and said, yes, but what about all of these veterans across the U.S. who are fighting cancers or other illnesses that they suspect are tied to their time in military service and are still struggling to get those diseases seen and cared for and provided for by the VA? And the spokesman, Jonathan Hoffman, said that Esper is actually raising this issue with Wilkie over the weekend while he's there. To his credit, Esper did, the DOD secretary, did take on at least one aspect of the potential cancers and clusters that we're seeing, and that's the PFAS, that's the military fighting foam. And he did that on his first day on the job, where he directed a task force to start looking at, one, whether there's a tie, two, how bad it is, and three, what can be done about it. And one of the aspects of that task force would be to consider ways to ease the path for service connection for veterans who had been exposed and now have some sort of cancer or other illness, to make sure that the VA recognizes those claims and that they are, you know, approved 100% disability for the illnesses they now have. Right now, in the last few weeks, the comedian John Stewart, who was such a voice for the 9/11 first responders, has joined with Burn Pits 360 and numerous other veterans groups. He said publicly now that he worked for the 9/11 responders, and now he's going to add his voice to this, you know, toxic exposure campaign for veterans, and released an ad saying, you know, there's no time to waste. It's time to get you the care you need, basically. So I do get a sense that there's a lot of momentum on this issue on Capitol Hill. It is so complicated from when they were first exposed and put at risk to then coming home and, you know, then getting these illnesses and having to then try and ask the VA and DOD to say, look, I think this happened to me while I was at war, and because I served, please help take care of me. It's a heartbreaking story, but it's not the first time it's been told. As you know, this is, you know, Agent Orange, Vietnam veterans have gone through this. You still have Blue Water Navy veterans going through this. This Gulf is just War the latest generation too. Facing it.
Yeah, the different Gulf War exactly. illnesses of the 90s. I mean, a lot of that, they denied, but then it came out about the people exposed to the chemicals at Camisea and the depleted uranium and the anthrax vaccines and the anti-sarin pills that they had taken and all these things. But then they were like, oh, well, that sounds to me like six different explanations. So it must just be in your head. Maybe you should drink a beer and stop complaining so much and this kind of thing, as these people are dropping down dead. So
yeah,
it's an interesting thing, isn't it? Like the politics of it, Tara, where, I mean, what could possibly be more obvious for any congressman or senator to flog all day long about how much they care about American soldiers and how they'll go to the mat and how they'll do anything for them? And I understand that the military has an interest in playing these things down and what have you, but still, I mean, it seems like the political interest in, because, I mean, after all, the enlisted are held up as the very, well, and officers too, I guess, are held up as the very best people in our whole society, and who risk everything, quite literally, many of them do risk everything to do as they're told by our government here. And our government has a responsibility to them. And it just seems like that should be such an unstoppable sort of a narrative. Why do you need John Stewart to chime in the year 2019? After, you know, George Bush promised that this one wasn't going to be like Vietnam, where our veterans are standing broke and homeless on the side of the road and abandoned and sick. That this one, we love our soldiers this time. We're going to never criticize the war, even. We love them so much. And all of this narrative. And then I don't understand the countervailing for. I mean, I understand the Pentagon doesn't want to highlight it, but it just seems like that shouldn't, in the scheme of things, that shouldn't be enough to stop this from really becoming such a major issue and one that people are at least working to get to the bottom of, you know?
Well, there's two final points I'd want to make. One is that it's likely that cost is a factor here. If you do blanket approvals, claim approvals, and say that, well, everyone that served at this base between this year and this year would be approved for service connection, that can become very, very expensive very quickly. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that Congress is mindful of that. But secondly, the way the VA is handling it now, where between either denying claims or when by the time they finally get around to approving a claim, a cancer has become an advanced stage cancer, it's much more expensive to treat. If you just have like screening in place ahead of time, if you approve claims quickly and get these veterans the care they need, it actually might save them money. So, and then just final point I want to make, as you probably know, not all veterans get their care from the VA. Right. Of the 19.6 million military veterans right now, only about 6 million or so are treated by the VA. So that means that the vast majority don't get their health care taken care of by the VA, which also means that the numbers that we're seeing don't tell the whole story and that there's likely more out there.
Right. And now, are there major kind of hospital or insurance groups in the private sector that do really specialize in veterans who maybe you guys could focus on their numbers?
That I don't know. What I do, you know, a lot of veterans that go after they separate from military service, if their career and they've done 20 years, they can get their health care provided by TRICARE, which is run by DOD. Mm-hmm. But a lot of them who go into the private sector may have private insurers through their employer. So that's right. Why there's not like one central repository for all this data.
Mm-hmm. Although it should be able to be spreadsheetable somehow. You know, so much of the healthcare records are all digitized and everything anyway, right? That maybe and veteran status is something that private employers always keep track of. So maybe there is a way to crack that code. Not that I would be any help.
I hope there is a way. I think it would be an uphill climb because you deal with medical privacy. Right. Not everybody wants to report that they have cancer. You know, for obvious reasons, you don't want the public to know. You don't want a future employer to know, that sort of thing.
I guess maybe I'm just imagining, you know, a way to do it where it's anonymous, but you just know how many veterans with, as you said, this code of disease in this state, but without finding out their names and addresses at the same time, you know, but I don't. What do I know?
Well, it seems like we can solve a lot of stuff with data. I'm sure, but eventually we could get there on that one.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, thank you so much for coming on the show. This has been really great, and it's very important work that you've done here. Really appreciate it.
Awesome. Thanks a bunch.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, you guys. That is Tara Kopp, and she is at McClatchy Newspapers, McClatchyDC.com, and the series is called Stricken, Aviators Afflicted and War with Cancer. All right, y'all. Thanks. Find me at LibertarianInstitute.org, at ScottHorton.org, AntiWar.com, and reddit.com/Scott Horton Show. Oh yeah, and read my book, Fool's Errand, Timed and the War in Afghanistan, at foolserrand.us.